So last week we did the bronze serpent. If you missed it, it's on the website, the podcast, the YouTube. So you can look at it again for your homework. Or if you missed it, you can look at it again the first time. But as we go into Passover, Holy Week, Good Friday, Resurrection Day, we, of course, are going to talk about sacrifice. And all of Passover is based on a lamb has to be killed, and the blood has to be placed on the door. And if you have the blood of the lamb on your door, you're safe from the curse. If you don't, you die in the curse. And, you know, there wasn't a house in Egypt that wasn't affected by this plague. And the Israelites, if they didn't do the ritual with the lamb and the blood, their firstborn would also have been killed. Because God said, you have to do this. The other nine plagues didn't affect them. We'll get more into this later. But the tenth plague, this certain thing had to be done, because this was going to be their deliverance from slavery. And of course, if you're under the blood with a capital B of the lamb with a capital L, then you're safe from the curse of sin. So that's a pretty clear parallel. And when we saw with the bronze serpent, that was kind of the prefigurement of the cross. I mean, Jesus mentioned it three times. When the Son of Man is lifted up, you'll lift up the Son of Man. When the Son of Man is lifted up, I'm going to draw all men to myself. So it was pretty important. But we also talked about how this didn't really make any sense, that when you got bit by this poisonous serpent, you had to go over to this pole and look at this image of a serpent, and then you were going to be cured. Didn't make much sense. So now we're going to fast forward, because we're going to talk a lot from especially 1 Corinthians the next few weeks, because it's such an awesome book. So this is why it's called The Foolish Message, because Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians, all these passages are from 1 Corinthians, and we're going to go over again in a little while who Paul was, but I think you all know that. So keep in mind who is writing this. This isn't like some crazy revolutionary guy from Turkey who's doing this. This is a Pharisee of Pharisees who's been converted and come to faith in Yeshua the Lord who's writing this. For the message of the cross is foolishness to those that are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise and bring to nothing the understanding of the prudent. In fact, Paul goes back and quotes from Isaiah 29:14. Isaiah wrote this 700 years or so before the crucifixion. You know, as we talked about before Christmas time, you know, 700 years before Jesus is born, he's writing all these prophecies about the virgin will be with child, the light's going to shine in the gloom, you know, he's going to be the king. And 730-ish years before the cross, he writes, of course, Isaiah 52 and 53, which, if you don't read that at least once a week, you should think about what happened on the cross 20 times a day. And Isaiah 52, 53, you should read at least once a week. But Paul quotes from Isaiah because the wisdom of the wise is going to be destroyed, because the cross doesn't make any sense. Can you imagine going now, if there was a meeting of the presidents of all the universities in the Ivy League, and you were working there as, you know, somebody who cleaned the toilets and mopped the floor, and you went into their meeting and said, you know, your eternal destiny depends on what you think happened when Jesus was on the cross. How do you think that would be received? Aren't you the guy who mops the floor and cleans the toilet? What in the world are you talking about? We're like the smartest people in the country. I'm the president of Harvard University. I'm not like some yahoo from the backwoods. You know, what do you think you're, who do you think you're talking to? Right? That's how it would be received. Your coworkers, who aren't presidents of Ivy League schools, say, well, that's pretty narrow-minded, don't you think? Or that doesn't make any sense. And you can say, actually, it doesn't make any sense, because St. Paul tells us it's foolishness for those that are perishing. And as he put it, I don't know which way to point this thing. As he put it, right. Now go back to that first slide. You know, he says it's foolishness to those that are perishing, but for us who are being saved, it's the power of salvation. When you come to understand what happened at the cross, and let me tell you, last week when that I was carrying that cross back downstairs and that crossbeam fell off and hit me on the head, and then the thorns kind of hit me when I was trying to go, oh, and trying to pull myself together. You know, that's such a ridiculous taste of the suffering that would have been involved here that it's embarrassing to even say that the thing fell on my head and it hurt for a while, because it was nothing. And I certainly wouldn't want that shoved into my head. But, you know, we who are being saved understand this because we've come to faith by the power of the Holy Spirit. But if that has not happened to you, it's a foolish message. And when he says he's going to destroy the wisdom of the wise, we're going to see what he means by that, because he's going to present a plan. Like, you know, keep in mind the bronze serpent. It was a plan that didn't make any sense. You got bit by a poisonous snake. You were going to die unless you went out and looked at this pole. Okay, that's weird. But this isn't something that can be planned or reasoned out. This isn't something that you can have a whole bunch of smart people sitting in a room somewhere and figure out intellectually how God's going to save the world. Right? Because if we were going to make a plan of salvation, it wouldn't be this. If we were allowed to make a plan, what would the plan be? Let's just forget about sin and stuff. Let's just everybody be saved. I like that plan. Then you, for your whole life, you can do whatever you want, and you don't have to worry about anything, and, you know, you don't have to worry about a scorecard, you don't have to worry about crosses, you don't have to worry about what you, everybody's saved. There's more and more people nowadays saying, everybody's going to be saved. You know, universalism. There are some people in a church that Monica knows well that I'm not going to mention names, but some of the people that were in the leadership team there became universalists. They just said, well, there's no point doing ministry because everybody's going to be saved. I say, wow, where does it say that in the Bible? Boy, Jesus never mentioned that. He made it sound like we had to go through some stuff on our way there. So you can't plan this out or reason it out, and there's nothing we can add to it by our intellect. And we can't explain it. We go back into the Torah and say to God, well, tell me, why, if I bring this lamb to the temple and I put my hand on the lamb and my sins transfer to that animal, I mean, it's an animal, and then the priest kills the animal and sprinkles the blood, my sins atoned for? This is an animal. This is a lamb. It doesn't make any sense. But to us it makes sense. Why? Because it's blood atonement. Without the shedding of blood, there's no forgiveness of sin. The fact that the lamb had to die, like the Passover lambs, you know, the day Jesus died, which was Passover, there were 250,000 lambs killed in Jerusalem. Can you imagine? I mean, can you imagine the mess, the smell? 250 lambs killed just because the blood had to be used. 250,000 lambs killed. So nothing can explain that. When you read through the sacrifices in the Torah, it doesn't make any sense. Most people read, you know, through Leviticus and they just say, oh, this is so weird, I'm not going to read this anymore. Because it doesn't make any sense. And the question is, what did that little lamb have to do with the fact that you sinned? And of course, the answer is nothing. An hour ago, the little thing was bouncing around in the pasture and eating grass and being a happy little lamb, and now it's dead. So on Palm Sunday, when the true lamb rides into the city, was the day that everybody was picking out the lambs they were going to use for the Passover sacrifice. And what did the leader say? Rabbi, make them stop that. Because they're praising you, and you're just a nobody from the backwoods, because we're the ones that have the reason and the intellect. We're the ones who understand these things. You know, isn't it funny that you could have rooms full of hundreds and hundreds of theologians, and the guy who mops the floor and cleans the toilet may be the only one that's saved, because he's the only one who knows the truth. Although they've studied all their lives, they may not know the truth. So we don't have anything to add to this, and we can't explain it. Because the fact is that we have a crucified Redeemer. That's the fact of the matter. You know, who was Jesus? What did he do? When I was converted, when I had my conversion experience in 1995, I walked around for a couple of weeks thinking in my head, who was Jesus and what did he do? I mean, I was so, you know, tied up with reason and intellect. You know, I went to science and engineering school. I went to medical school. There has to be an explanation for this. It doesn't make any sense. So you try to logically figure out, you know, why did he do this? What was he thinking while he did it? What? How could this possibly? I don't get this. And of course you don't get it. The fact is, your Redeemer has to die. Foretold, prefigured in all the Torah, all the scrolls. As he said, all the scrolls are about me. It's all about blood sacrifice. They were waiting for a different kind of a Redeemer. The plain fact of salvation was that blood had to take away your sin. Because when you sin, you die. God told Adam and Eve, eat this fruit, you're going to die. Satan says, oh, you're not going to die. Come on. Does that make any sense to you guys? I thought you guys were smarter than that. Come on, Eve. Just have some. God didn't really say that. And she says, well, he did say that. Okay, well, maybe he said that, but that's not exactly what he meant. Let me tell you why he said that. Yeah. What's he trying to pull? You know, you have a whole society of people now who don't want to hear anything about a moral law. The fact that God has a law that not only do we have to live by, but permeates the whole universe, because I want to do what I want to do. I'm independent of that. That's the only thing that makes any sense to me. But the plain fact of salvation is that a crucified Redeemer is put before the world, like that bronze serpent was. And you have to decide what to do with that. I mean, not you guys. I've already dealt with it, but I'm talking about people in general. You know, I always say this like preaching to the choir, but, but the world has to decide what to do with this, because it's all public. Your learning, your logic, and your intellect can't get you the information. That has to be put aside. Remember, keep Paul in mind. That has to be put aside. Because you can't go to the cross and say, you know what? I got this figured out. I know all about this. I know. I think I got this. Now, tell me if I'm wrong. So people out there say, well, you know, Jesus was a good teacher. He was a philosopher. He came to show us how to live, and that's nice. But so did a lot of other people. So did a lot of other teachers. Right? Every religion has a holy book. Our holy book's the only one that has prophecy in it. No other holy book has, well, there's no other holy book, but no other holy book has prophecy in it. The Quran has no prophecy in it. Neither do any other things. So, your intellectual reasoning has to be put aside because the message is so foolish. And so if that's the case, Paul goes on. Where is the wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the disputer of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? For since in the wisdom of God, the world through wisdom did not know God, it pleased God through the foolishness of the message preached to save those who believe. God shows his wisdom and his power everywhere. But that doesn't convince people. You know, in Romans, it says, every man's going to be without excuse at the end. Because you see the evidence of the Creator in everything. And you guys have really seen it. And when you look at the stars, when you look at the anything, you look at the earth, you look at the microscopic things, you look at galaxies, you see his handiwork in it, as the psalmist says. The firmament's full of his handiwork. And you say, so if you die tonight and you say, oh, you mean you really are the Creator? You mean there really is a Creator? I thought everything just happened randomly. I thought everything just came from nothing. No, in Romans 1 it says every man is going to be without excuse. So through the foolishness of this message is what God uses to save those who believe. Because nobody gets it through wisdom. Through wisdom, nobody came to know God. But through the foolishness of this message, we came to know him. Well, who are you to say? Well, you know, there's 58 ways up the mountain, and it doesn't matter which road you're on. They all go to the same place. They say, really? I always say when somebody says that to me, and I'm sure you guys have heard it, I say, did you see the Passion of the Christ? And everybody always goes, oh, yeah. I say, pretty hard to watch, isn't it? Yeah, it's really bad, really hard. Well, if there were 58 different ways to get to heaven, then Jesus had to be mentally ill. Why would he go through that? He could have just said, everybody be good, follow whatever way you like. If you want to follow Buddha, that's cool. If you want to follow me, that's great. I'd love to have you. But, you know, if you want to follow Confucius, you know, that's good. You want to be a Hare Krishna, that's great. You know, whatever. You know, hey, it all goes to the same place. No, it's just, I'm the only way. So the foolishness of the message was that Paul preached a crucified Jesus in plain language. I don't know anything except Christ and Christ crucified. I don't want to know anything except Christ and Christ crucified. And I don't preach anything except Christ and Christ crucified. That's all he preaches. Nothing fancy about it. Nothing intellectual about it. It made for some great conversations, you know, like I always say, you know, he walked into Starbucks or somewhere, and there were some guys in the corner talking about the basketball game. And Paul would go over and say, I want to tell you about Christ and Christ crucified. And they'd say, well, we're talking about the basketball game. And he'd say, well, I don't care. This is all I talk about. He was an annoying old guy. That's why I like him. So he preached in a plain language in terms that everybody understood, because the truth doesn't need any help from us. You know, somebody once said the word is like a lion in a cage. You open the cage and let the lion out, you don't have to worry about the lion. The lion will take care of itself. You don't have to worry about, oh, what's that poor lion going to eat? Oh, what's it going to eat? You know, the word's going to take care of itself. You know, God uses us to be ministers of the word, to preach the word, but he doesn't need us to help him out with what the word is. The word exists, and Paul preached that not only was he a crucified redeemer, but he was the Son of God. And so this is what you have to believe. So even though he wrote these very complicated Greek books, this was the basis. You know, they used to be called the kerygma. It's one of those great Greek words that starts with a chi, the kerygma. Charisma and koinonia are the other two. But these were the basics of what Paul preached. It's the fundamental truth that the Redeemer is the Son of God and he had to die. And you have to come to the cross in order to be saved. And if you don't, you won't be, because he's the only way. Just like the bronze serpent was the only way. For Christ did not send me to baptize, but to preach the gospel. Not with wisdom of words, lest the cross of Christ should be made of no effect. Paul says, I didn't come to baptize people. There's other guys who'll baptize you. You know, if I preach to your group and you all come to faith, then my friend Fred and Bob over here are going to baptize you. You know, he only baptized a handful of people, he tells us. I left it out. But he says, oh, yeah, you know, I baptized Crispus and Gaius. And I baptized the family of Stephanus. And I can't remember if I baptized anybody else. But he says, I didn't come to baptize. I came to preach, not with wisdom of words. This was one of the smartest people who lived in the first century. But he says, my wisdom is not what's preaching the cross. Because if your salvation could be brought around by wisdom, then the cross would lose its power, because then you got saved by your wisdom. But your wisdom doesn't matter. It would make the cross of no effect if it was based on intelligence and wisdom. Right? So our wisdom makes the cross of no effect. So when you hear preachers talk on a very intellectual level, well, you know, Adam and Eve were just symbols, and the flood was just a symbol, and Jesus didn't really do miracles, you know. There were some guys, when he fed the 5,000, you know, there were some people that had some bread and fish with them, and they all took it out and had like a picnic, and it looked like it was a miracle. And, you know, when he died, you know, they took his body down, they threw it into the pit, and wild dogs ate it. And these are Christian people who say these kind of things. Can you imagine? Can you imagine facing your final judgment if you believe there was no resurrection and they took Jesus' body and threw it somewhere and wild dogs ate it? Oh, and he was conceived because a Roman soldier raped Mary, and she made up the story of Gabriel to cover it up. This is the Jesus Seminar, as it's called. It should be called the Satan Seminar. But, I mean, can you imagine? And intellectual people sit home and read this kind of stuff and go, well, yes. I mean, certainly this makes sense. Because, you know, this stuff certainly doesn't make any sense. So it's a, if we could be converted by eloquent words, if you could be converted by philosophers that the Greeks liked, it would make the cross of no effect. Right? The cross would be emptied of its power, because you can say, oh, you know, I preached such a good argument the other night that two people became Christians. And that's because I did such an awesome job. And they got what I was talking about. So, it's great. No, that's not why they became Christians. You ever think like Paul, let's use Paul as an example, but all those guys did this. They went to places in North Africa and Greece and Turkey and Italy, and they preached to people when they talked with the Gentiles who had no idea who Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were, had no idea what the temple in Jerusalem was all about, had no idea about blood atonement, no idea about the whole plan of salvation through the Hebrew scriptures, but they came to faith in the Jewish Messiah, like our ancestors. It's pretty amazing. I mean, like one day you're worshiping the sun god, and the next day you're a Christian. You've never heard of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You've never heard about taking lambs to the temple. Pretty neat. So the cross would be emptied of its power if your wisdom was involved. And, you know, speaking of Greeks, you know, the Greeks, as you know, they were the philosophers. They loved to debate. They were influenced by wisdom, by philosophy. You know, when Paul, you know, Paul couldn't make any headway in Athens because when he was on the Areopagus, he's talking to these philosophers. He tells them about God. He tells them about Messiah. Tells them about eternal life. And they say, wow, you know, what is this babbler trying to say? Yeah, read that for your homework. It's Acts 17. You know, what is this babbler trying to say? You know, we're the smart guys, and what's this guy talking about? And then they say, well, we'll get back to you on that. We'll hear some more about this some other time, but right now we're going to go get some lunch because you're talking craziness. I don't care how many languages you know, you're talking craziness. So they had all this philosophy and all this debate. And we have acted by faith. We haven't done it by philosophy and wisdom and debate. We've accepted it by faith. Right? Paul says it's faith from beginning to end. From first to last, it's all about faith. Abraham believed, and it was counted as righteousness. He didn't follow any law. He didn't have the law. It was all by faith. Paul tells us he put his learning aside. You know, Paul, from the time of his bar mitzvah at age 13, maybe 12 in his case, because he was pretty smart, he was in the temple from then on studying. Now, when he was 12 years old, it was probably around the year 20. So he stayed at the temple the whole time studying. He studied under Gamaliel, the greatest rabbi of the first century. You can read all this in the book of Acts. All those guys do is study the scrolls. That's all they do. To this day, that's all they do. They don't even serve in the military because they're praying for the nation and they're studying the Torah. They may spend their whole lives studying a handful of verses, debating every letter, every word over and over again. This is what they do. And Paul, Saul of Tarsus, was one of these because his name was, you know, Shaul, Saul. So he was one of these guys. But he puts his learning aside. You know, in Philippians 3, he says, you know, all that stuff, I had reason to boast. I'm from the tribe of Benjamin. I knew everything. I studied everything. I was a Pharisee of Pharisee. I was a Hebrew of Hebrews. But now I count that all as loss compared to knowing Christ. That was all loss. Then he adds, it's all rubbish. And he uses the Greek word skabula that means manure. But you don't want to write manure in the Bible, so you write rubbish. So Paul says, all that stuff I learned compared to knowing Christ is rubbish. All the wisdom I had, rubbish. Because on the way to Damascus to round up believers, I got converted in a very dramatic way. And he put his learning aside. Well, you never read any place where Paul says, well, you guys, you know, if you want to follow Jesus, here's what you guys better do. you guys better go get yourself circumcised, and all of you better go start reading the Mosaic Law, and all of, no, he preached against that everywhere he went, against the Judaizers. Read Galatians. So, now, after all this time, he understood. He had all this stuff downloaded into his brain on that road when he got blinded. And now he saw the plan. Now he understood that everything he had learned about was about Jesus. How Yeshua was in every one of the scrolls, every one of the verses that he studied. It was all about him. Now he understood it. Now he understood Isaiah 52 and 53. Modern Jews don't understand it. They say, we can't understand that. And I always say, I can explain it to you if you'd like. But then that always causes us some more arguments. But, I was doing a teaching the other day about the bronze serpent. And somebody who was listening said, well, if you're a Jew and you read that today, don't you think that's Jesus? And I'd say, well, you would think so. But so now he understood all this that he didn't get while he was looking at the scrolls, while he spent all those years studying. Because it all was revealed to him. You know, as you go through Acts, he always says, oh, the Lord showed me this and the Lord told me that. And when I saw the Lord, he told me this. You know, he had a USB port in his brain, and everything was downloaded. So he was blind, and he was like, wow, what's happened to me? And he spends 3 days praying and fasting, and I mean, what else would you do after an experience like that? So his whole life is changed, and he goes from being Pharisee of Pharisees to preaching against the Judaizers. And he says, this is the message that's preached. You know, in Romans 5, he writes, I think it's 5:12. Romans 5, he writes, faith comes by hearing. Hearing comes by preaching the word of God. I'm paraphrasing, but that's the gist of it. And if they're not sent, how can they preach? How can somebody hear the message if nobody's sent to them? So Paul says the message, you know, it goes on by the foolishness of our preaching. So we're preaching a foolish message in a foolish way. It has nothing to do with his intellectualism, his intellectual prowess that, you know, if you read Galatians 1, he says, no one was more zealous for the law than I was. He doesn't say I'm in the top 10%. He doesn't say, oh, there were 3 or 4 other guys who were smarter than me. He says, I was the best one. I was advancing more than anybody, and now it's all rubbish. So his life changes, and he says he's preaching a foolish message that's not consistent with his intellect or our intellect. And when you say it's not consistent, and when you say it's kind of foolish and doesn't make any sense, the question you have to ask yourself is, what was he actually saying that was so weird, that was so foolish, that was so unusual, that was so inconsistent? You know, what did the message boil down to? We live because one died with a capital O. We live because he died. Does that make any sense? No, doesn't make any sense at all. Tell somebody you're living, you're spiritual, you could be spiritually alive because 2,000 years ago, this youngish man who was probably a really good carpenter and then he became a preacher was executed. Now in your mind, wouldn't you say, what? There have been plenty of people executed over the history of humanity. But because one died, we live. We're blessed because one was cursed. One was cursed. Because Messiah was cursed. Remember, he became a curse so that he could defeat the curse, like the bronze serpent. He became a curse Cursed is he who hangs on a tree. You know, the Jews never hung people because they thought it was disgusting to put people on a tree. So Deuteronomy says, cursed is anyone who hangs from a tree. So Jesus was cursed. He hung on a tree so that the Gentiles could get the promises made to Abraham. So because one was cursed, we were blessed. And because one was condemned, we're justified. We're not guilty. We're declared not guilty. You know, Paul uses legal terminology. Justified is not guilty. And it's more than just not guilty. It's you didn't do the crime. I mean, we forgot about it. I mean, don't worry about it. We're justified because one was condemned. This is the foolishness of the message. Now see, we don't think it's foolish because we understand it because we've come to it. But when you think about it, it doesn't make any sense. So who is this guy? One's condemned and but dies and I don't know. Dude, what are you talking about? It doesn't make any sense. For the Jews request a sign, Greeks seek after wisdom. But we preach Christ crucified, to the Jews a stumbling block, to the Greeks, foolishness. But for those who are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ, the power of God and the wisdom of God. The Jews say that can't be, because when Messiah comes, he's going to be a powerful military leader. He's going to be a powerful political leader. He's going to restore the kingdom like David and Solomon had. Remember the minutes before the ascension, Jesus gives those guys the Great Commission. And what does Peter say? Like, he doesn't get it. And he says, oh, are you going to restore the kingdom now? Like, okay, now is now the time that you're going to go back into the city with the soldiers and the white horse? And Jesus says, no. It's not for you to know. I mean, this is where, you know, Peter doesn't get it. But here it is. It's a stumbling block to the Jews because they're looking for a powerful Messiah. And to the Greeks, it's foolishness because it makes no sense. But whether you're a Jew or a Greek, this is the power of salvation. The Jews always wanted proofs. You know, they always said to Jesus, what, can you do a sign? I mean, we want to see a sign. Well, you're not going to see a sign. We're going to talk about that Sunday morning. We're not going to see a sign. Or at one point he says, the only sign you guys are going to get is the sign of Jonah. 3 days in the belly of the fish. The Son of Man is going to be 3 days in the bowels of the earth. It's the only sign you're going to get. They wanted definite proof. They wanted signs. And the Greeks wanted to debate. Always ready to debate. And when you look at who was actually spreading this message, Paul was the only intelligent one. All these other guys were uneducated. And people heard these uneducated guys, fishermen, working people, preaching this message. And the reason they were converted is the power was not in the intellect that these guys had. The power was in the message. When Paul stood up in front of a bunch of Gentiles that, like I mentioned, didn't know anything, the Holy Spirit fell on these people and said, what he's telling you is true. And they said, wow, what he's telling me is true. Remember, no one can say Jesus is Lord except by the Spirit. I can't read all that, but, you know, it's about remember your calling, brethren. Not many of you are wise according to the flesh. They were a sorry bunch of guys. Peter was a total dope. James and John just wanted to call down lightning on people, sit one at the right hand, one at the left hand. Oh, this is going to be cool. Can't we call fire down on those guys over there? Let's have some fun while we're doing this. It's going to be awesome. So, not many are wise Not many are mighty or noble. But God's chosen the foolish things of the world, the foolish things of the world, to put shame, to shame the wise. And the weak things of the world to shame the mighty. So your arrogance gets broken down. You see, this weak, Jesus was not a weak man, he was a strong man, but you see this weakened person dying, and that's salvation. A smart person would say, he's the Messiah? He looks like a rock. Look at him. He's going to be dead in a few minutes. What kind of Messiah is that? Come down from the cross if you're the Christ. Then we'll believe it. Because that's the kind of thing we can believe. So the weak things shame the strong. The foolish things shame the wise. So your arrogance is broken. So, you know, like we always say, you don't go to the cross and say, I'm here. You should be happy I'm here because I'm a really smart guy and I'm really important and I got a lot of stuff to do. So I thought I'd come here, you know, a couple minutes, but so I hope you're happy I'm here. That's what's broken by this whole thing. Right? And all of you have met Jesus and you realize who you are, where you stand, and you realize you're a broken, frail person. You're not going to achieve salvation because you're so smart, you're so wise, you're so awesome. So that gets all broken down. So then what does that leave us with? Seemingly foolish things shame the wise. Weak things shame the strong. People who are vain and arrogant don't want to hear that. Because they like being vain and arrogant. But you can't go to the cross being vain and arrogant. So the gospel brings down your pride. It breaks your pride. Remember, you know, you heard the old saying, the ground is level at the foot of the cross. You know, it's not like if you're a billionaire, you're on a higher level, and if you're the guy who scrubs the floor, you're on the lower level. The ground is level there. So you can't glory in yourself. We can't glory in ourselves. Because it's the whole thing, like the lamb that was salvation, the humble capital L lamb was salvation. You know, in Revelation, the Savior looks like a lamb that was slain. Not going to be a lamb when he comes back. Going to be the Lion of Judah when he comes back. And it's not going to be time for a lot of, I didn't know it was all true. Oh, boy, I wish you'd have told me. I did tell you. Oh, well, yeah, but I had to go to work. I had to do stuff. I had a lot of meetings I had to go to. So, the blood atonement is what breaks the arrogance and pride because it's the only solution to the problem. And so it's a foolish message. And Paul talks about it. It's a foolish message and it's spread by the foolishness of our preaching. Paul didn't care if he made a fool of himself. You know, like when David danced before the ark and his wife said, you sure made a fool of yourself today. And he says, hey, I was dancing because I was praising the Lord, and I'll be even more undignified than this if I have to be. Because I don't care what people think about me. Paul didn't care what people thought about him. You know, when he was in the prison at the end, he was evangelizing the guards. He even talked to people in Caesar's family. He says, yeah, I'm in prison. I'm chained like a criminal because of the gospel, but the gospel is not chained. He wasn't embarrassed or humiliated, like, oh, I hope nobody knows I'm in prison. He says, I'm in prison for the gospel, and I'm here evangelizing people. So a foolish preaching, a foolish message, but that's how the world is saved. Whew. Any questions?